This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry, Mariana, and we also have Patrick. And yes, they're using matchsticks to keep their eyes open because it is 12:30 odd over there. How's that for commitment, listeners?
That's because we've got a slave driver for an editor.
Oh, well, we need to get a better time to suit you for next week. So tell me, you've been watching Tango?
Yeah, that's right. So I know that Julie's been mentioning to some of her Auckland Bridge Club members that she's going to try and get Patrick to do a tango while he's over here.
What's the chances of that?
Zero to nothing, I'd say.
But any chances of an 8-card fit breaking 6-0?
Well, you both don't sleep anyway. You only need, 3 hours sleep a night, don't you?
Patrick's playing the first match in the morning and I'm not, so I'll be able to have a sleep in.
Oh, my goodness.
I did send you a picture of the opening ceremony. The last picture I sent was of a tango taking place on stage. It wasn't Patrick, I hasten to add.
So tell us about what you're doing at the moment.
Well, we all arrived here safely, and today was the first thing that anything really happened. Our captain organised a little bit of a practice for us against the seniors and women's teams, just so we could get used to the tables, and they have screens up. You have screens so that you can't see your partner, and you have bidding boxes and boards underneath where you put the bids under, and that was good just to get the feel of things. The playing room's quite impressive. They're quite big, aren't they, Patrick?
Yes, the tables I wasn't so thrilled with because the way they've organised the screens, you've got to put your card quite a long way just so that people on the other side of the screen can see it. Or your right or left-hand opponent. Your partner can see it because they're straight on, but the screen, sort of like the slit at the bottom of the screen, isn't cut all the way to the edge of the table or anything. So, yes.
What happened at our table a couple of times, the person on my right led because she was behind a screen and I couldn't see it. I didn't realise she'd led. So we all sat there for a while while everybody else could see that she'd led, and I didn't realise she had. So, but I guess we'll probably get used to that. The packs are quite big too. It's quite a long way to the other side of the...
That's true, yes.
Yeah, when partner leads something, I look over there and think, that is a long way away. All in all, it's still quite a good setup. Yeah.
All right. So who are we facing tomorrow?
The mixed team. There are 29 teams all up, and Patrick and Julie and Blair and Liz are playing against Canada first up. All we know about them is that they're playing something called bacon.
Bacon?
None of us know what that is.
We don't know what that is. They're supposed to fill in the system card saying the description of the bid rather than a name, but this particular team hadn't done that. We'll find out. It's probably a defence to One No Trouble or something. It's not their whole system.
Yeah, okay. No, it's not. So you know how Judge Julie always says it's not good enough. If somebody asks what that is, it's not good enough to say Lebon Sole or, you know, Tartan 2 or whatever. You've actually got to explain some sort of point count or something about distribution. So equally, it's probably not good enough to say we're playing bacon. Sure, they'll explain it tomorrow.
Since we are going to be commenting about the World Champs, Barry and the crew, I found this piece from Peter Hollins about a rise of a legend. Have a listen.
I want to introduce you to another bridge legend. This was my favourite description I'd found of him. He is young, he is brilliant, he is French, and he used to be good looking. I am talking about Thomas Bassi. Born in 1984, Thomas Bassi was destined to leave his mark on the world of bridge, but like any great journey, he didn't start right at the top. And I think this is an important lesson that's applicable to like all bridge players. Often I see people these days, oh, I can't go up there, I can't play up that field, I'm going to get beaten up. But Thomas' story really illustrates that he put himself out there and constantly tried and improved and improved. He first played in a World Open Teams event back in 2002, and he finished in 145th place. Far from a promising start, but for Thomas, this was just the beginning. The following years were filled with countless tournaments, each one sharpening his skills, preparing him for the moment where he could finally break through. Slowly, but surely, Thomas was climbing the ranks. He placed 66th in the European Transnational in 2005, and then coming 32nd in a World Transnational later that same year. Tomar was learning fast. In 26, he placed 33rd in a World Open Teams Championship, edging ever closer, and his persistence was about to pay off. In just 1 year later, 2007, would be the year that Thomas Bessie would truly announce his arrival on a global stage. That year, Thomas won not one, but two prestigious titles. He won the European Transnational Open Teams, and he won the World Transnational Open Teams. After 5 years of climbing that ladder, he had finally reached the top. From 145th place in a world championship to number one in just 5 years. I think not enough bridge players realize that before you can get to these levels, you put yourself out there, you go into these tough tournaments, you get smacked down, but you learn, you go away and you try and try again. I reckon Thomas' story is great for this. It's not just he jumped on the scene and he was setting it on fire, winning event after event. But you can see each year he was making progress and progress and progress. And he made astounding progress going from 145th to first. That is like such a dramatic increase over that period. Thomas' dedication to the game and unrelenting passion had paid off. But this was just the beginning of his legendary career. So by 2013, Thomas was widely regarded as like the biggest talent French bridge had ever seen. Despite his young age, he had already amassed more championships than many players do in a lifetime. He was a European champion, he was a world champion, but he was also known for his ability to win with any partner. A really rare skill in a game that thrives on chemistry and communication. And for this, Thomas had been honored with the IBPA Personality of the Year Award. So this prestigious award just isn't for the best player, but someone that's made a lasting impact on the bridge world. Thomas not only excelled as a player, but he's also done coaching and captaining and is even a journalist. His generosity, sportsmanship and kindness also made him a true ambassador of the game. When he won this award, he had also won an award for best played hand as a junior. And his reward for that was he got to have a game with Zia Mahmood. But he hasn't only played with bridge royalty, he's also played bridge with actual royalty. In 2013, at the prestigious Copenhagen Bridge Invitational, Thomas was once again demonstrating his mastery. He managed to finish second alongside his very own father. But what made this event truly unique was the pro-am portion of this, where Thomas played bridge with actual royalty. He played with Prince Henrik of Denmark. But while Thomas was making waves on the competitive scene, he was also playing a critical role behind the scene. In 2010, rumors had started to spread about two rising Israeli stars, Lotan Fischer and Ron Schwartz, which eventuated in the big 2015 cheating scandal that Boya Berglund shined a big light on. But Thomas, known for his integrity and love for the game, began quietly taking notes on their suspicious behavior all the way back from 2010. Here's a testimonial that he posted. This came out about 2012, I believe. So Lotan has almost won everything in the last 2 years with his new partner, Ron Schwartz. It kind of surprises me, as I consider Ron Schwartz to be a pretty weak player, incredibly weak regarding all his recent great achievements. Then during the 2012 Cavendish, I played against them, as did everyone else, and something weird happened at the table. After Ron Schwartz showed a 20-22 no-trump hand, Lotan Fischer, vulnerable with 4 points, passed the two no-trump bid, not trying to get the game bonus, while he knew that his side had 24-26 high card points combined. His partner, of course, only had 20 points and played so bad that he went down in two no trumps while the rest of the field went down one in three no trumps, sometimes even making. What was that bad play? Ron Schwartz had himself King 9-4 in diamonds opposite Queen Jack 8-4. And he played the diamond suit with a low one from his hand to the dummy's jack, which held the trick, followed by the queen of diamonds from dummy. This way, as there was no entry in dummy, he could not take ace-10-4th in either hand. I had ace-10-4th on his left, so he could have picked them up and made his contract easily. Of course, judging someone on this particular hand is not appropriate, but it is one example among many others. So what does this prove? Firstly, Ron Schwartz is definitely not at the level of the rest of the field, so to see him winning this event as many other competitions is more than suspect to me. I deeply think that Fischer Schwartz help each other by indicating to their partner that they are minimum or maximum of the range they've showed. Otherwise, Lotan's pass is absolutely unexplainable. We actually are a whole community to think what I think. Right after my incident at the table against Ron and Lotan, many people, bridge players, came to me after they'd heard I'd called the director against Lotan. About 10 bridge stars immediately came to me and told me such things as, "Whatever happened, I am with you." Or, "Whatever happened, I think the same as you." Or, again, "If you need someone to punch him once and for all, I'm your man."
So are there any seedings involved yet? Like, where do we sit as opposed to where Canada sit?
No seedings.
We haven't played a match. So there's no seeding. It's not that you're drawn against a team of the same rank or anything like that at the moment.
Oh, okay.
We're just going to play everybody.
It's a complete round robin. So we'll play all 28 countries.
And it's a complete round robin in every format or grade.
Oh, right.
There's different numbers in each one. There's 33 open teams and 24 senior teams. And 23 women's teams.
29 mixed.
And 29 mixed teams. And it'd be a different draw. So while the mixed, we're playing Canada followed by Turkey followed by Switzerland. And then there's two more matches. We've got 5-10 board matches each day because they've got different numbers of teams to get through their round robins. But yeah, we've actually got different numbers of boards in each different set. The idea is, the end of it, each round robin, the top 16 will make the knockout matches.
I'd say. All right. That's a lot of bridge.
It is. So 16, if you've got 23, 24, I guess everybody's got, you know, designs on sort of hoping they can make the top 16 to make the knockout stages. But there's still a lot of teams that are going to miss out.
Yeah.
There's 13 teams are going to miss out in the mix. There's, I don't know, 7 in the women's and 8 in the seniors, and there will be 17 in the open. So a lot of teams aren't going to make it.
Wow.
What was the opening ceremony like?
Well, New Zealand got a special mention at the beginning.
And that You're was because last time they forgot to. So they had to say, "Oh, we're going to make sure we mention New Zealand and South Africa this time," because we didn't last time.
It was a little bit of a joke. When she got to New Zealand, they said Netherlands, and then they said New Zealand. And then she said, "And New Zealand." I mentioned us twice. So we sort of got mentioned three times.
Nice. Yeah,
so and South Africa was the other country that missed out last time. So they got a mention as well.
That's awesome. Director, please.
Judge Judy is in session. It's the bailiff today.
He is Patrick.
Hey, I do actually have a question for bailiff.
He's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. He's ready for anything.
Okay. So picture this option. West opens one no trump. Pass by North, pass by partner, two diamonds by South, double by West, pass.
Well, the one no trump opener doubled.
Yep, doubled.
That was presumably a takeout double, was it?
I'm not too sure. And then partner passes, anyway, the two diamonds double, and then South bids two hearts. The one no trump opener West, then doubles again, pass by North and three diamonds by their partner, pass by South and three no trumps by West. Now, the director was called on this because West, even though they won the auction, felt that South was not able to bid again the two hearts, because North didn't alert the two diamonds. Apparently it's meant to be a long major. And then so South said two hearts when it got back to them. West said, "You're not allowed to bid." Are they allowed to bid?
Well, that's not quite true. I mean, the idea is that South isn't allowed to know that their partner's got the system wrong.
Yeah.
So if it's gone double, let's imagine that their partner had alerted it and explained that it was a long major.
Yeah.
And then they'd pass two diamonds anyway.
Right.
Well, they'd obviously have a lot of diamonds.
Yes.
So South has got unauthorized information that their partner has forgotten the system.
Yeah.
Now, so they therefore know their partner doesn't have the long diamonds they'd be expected to have for passing two diamonds.
I see, yeah.
So you're right. South would normally be expected to pass in this situation unless they've got an unusual hand. So if they had a void diamond and they had a seven-card major that they were overcalling, then, well, maybe it might be okay.
Yeah.
But the director has to take a dim view of and say, well, look, if it wasn't for the fact that you knew your partner had forgotten the system, would you have bid over two diamonds? Now, South also knows they've been passed out in two diamonds as a penalty double. So the director might take that into account and decide whether that they think that, well, yeah, everybody would bid two hearts. No one would pass two diamonds, even if they thought their partner was showing long diamonds with their pass.
Yeah.
But it depends on the exact hand. So in order to rule on it, you were to need to know what South's exact cards were. And then sometimes it can be subjective. So even if you know what South's cards were and told me, well, maybe mine would just be an opinion about how obvious it is to bid two hearts on the South hands. But certainly, yes, South having to swallow their medicine and pass two diamonds doubled and play into two diamonds doubled is quite a likely possibility because they've got information that they're not entitled to know that their partner has forgotten the system. Because think about it, it would be what it was. Mm. Imagine your partner explained it correctly and then passed. Partner would be showing a whole lot of diamonds and shortaging one of the majors. So therefore, if South has a couple of diamonds, they've definitely got to pass it.
I see. Okay.
Okay, interesting. Our captain went to the captain's meeting today and came back and told us a few things. And alerting is going to be quite different. Basically, he's saying you should alert everything, doubles, redoubles, anything that's unusual.
That's behind screens.
It is behind screens, so it's a lot different to ears.
Yeah, different story. And I thought the interesting part, unless I misunderstood my captain, I thought he was saying that when it comes to a ruling, that you need to actually pay money even to get someone to review it. You know how we send people for a review before they actually have an appeal? Well, you've got to pay money just to get the review, even before you think about taking it to appeals.
So I believe that's what he said. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So how much is it?
No, we didn't find out.
Why? Are you going to send money?
Yeah.
Are you sending us
money? Yes, no. They need to review.
It'll be peanuts, though, isn't it? Didn't you tell me that 10,000?
With all these things, I think you'll find that, no, it's not peanuts.
One thing we've discovered about Argentina, even though pesos are not worth much, you can't get much for them. A thousand pesos is worth about, what, Patrick, a dollar or something?
Well, 1,000 pesos is worth about $1.17 US. So 1,000 pesos is worth about $1.70 or $1.80 New Zealand.
Oh, my goodness.
I can tell you that.
Okay, listeners, it's a bit bitsy this week because we have pre-recorded some questions with Judge Julie before they left for Argentina. We're going to aim for a daily catch-up, and if not daily, every 2 days so that we can get some running commentary from Barry.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
Okay, let's move on to question two.
Okay. Right.
We're talking about the play this time. The bidding's all over. What could possibly go wrong now? Well, this can happen. So one of the defenders, it's his turn to play a card. He's, I don't know, maybe they're at trick two or three and they're out for it. He's thinking what to play. And he takes so long that declarer goes ahead and plays their card on their left. Now, what is that? What happens?
Okay, well, point out how lucky you are that I understand what you mean by on your left, because my sense of direction is lousy. So someone plays when they shouldn't have is a far better way of phrasing questions with me.
Okay.
Be a cuss about it. So if Declare is played and you're still thinking, you get to see their card. You get information that they've given you free of charge, which is very kind of them. So you get to make choices.
It is okay.
They still can't keep playing if you are still thinking. And as an example of that, we were playing the other day and someone stopped and talked for a very long time, and Declare and then led to the next trick, and the partner of the person thinking played, but they still hadn't turned their card over. Right?
Oh, I see.
So we all said, stop, you can't do that. You've got to wait until this person has finished, because they might want to look at the cards from that trick that they were playing to.
Right.
So yeah. They had actually played, I think they'd played, or they might not have. If the card is still face up on the table and they are thinking, we are still waiting before we move on to that next trick. You are really allowed to look at the cards and focus on what's been played. Some of the time it is really important.
So can they pick their card up and
start
again?
No. You can't pick up the card if you're defending at all, right?
Mariana was talking about the Declarer.
Okay, so played. Everyone's played to the trick and someone's sitting there with the card face up.
Yep.
And they are looking at the previous trick. If you play to the next trick, you can't change your mind what you're playing if you've won that trick. You just have to wait for this person to pick up their card. They're entitled to take time to think. Yep. Right? If they haven't played and they win the trick, then all sorts of interesting things are going to happen, because you will have led out of turn. And you're not allowed to. The director will be at the table.
Right.
All right. And I know that it's really, really frustrating when we are sitting there waiting for someone to play a card for what seems to be no apparently good reason. Or they're focusing on the trick and what's going on, and we can't do anything before we move on. But you are entitled to think.
The driving equivalent is, you know, playing a card when to try and make them hurry up. It's the equivalent of tailgating, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's not a bad way. I mean, sometimes if someone's taken a really long time, sometimes they've just forgotten to turn it over. So when you say, oh, are you ready? They will turn the card over and we'll all be happy. But some of the time, there is something happening where it becomes critical.
Mm. And I'm pretty sure I've heard the judge say before that the Declarer can show you their whole hand if they want. There's no penalty card.
Well, yeah, there is. There's a penalty because your opponents see it and they can get information that you wouldn't want them to have. So it's a bit of a stupid thing to do at times. Some of the time people are waiting for you to claim. Because if you haven't claimed, what's going on? You know, what's the problem? And they're trying to think, what is it that is the problem? Okay. Because there is a thing in the laws about not prolonging play unnecessarily.
Next thing you'll be telling me that people don't do stupid things at the bridge table. I'm not buying it.
No, I'm not buying that either. It's all right. I mean, apart from anything else, you and I could say it, tell a lot of stories about, I don't know, each other.
I got grovened by Judge Julie once. She did something so insane, I just couldn't believe that she would do anything in that insane. And so I played for her not to have done anything that insane. And guess what?
It was insane.
A Grosvenor is a wonderful thing. It is playing a card, as Barry said. You wouldn't think somebody would do from the holding they've got, and then you find out that they have. And as a hint to a lot of people out there that might be splitting honours, like the King, Queen or the Queen Jack, when you don't need to. Because that seems to be a rapidly increasing thing that people do. And I remember Patrick telling me off because I didn't play Restricted Choice a while ago.
Oh, look, we had that last week.
Because I knew that this is the card that they had. So, you know.
So it does work, Eureka.
It's called a Grosvenor, or else it's just called, you know, Insanity, depending on who you are.
Oh, the one that Julie got me on was many years ago, but I can tell you I'm still bitter.
I know, it's wonderful. Steve, how many years enjoyment?
All right, thanks and have a great time. Okay, so the game plan for this week is that after this you're going to go and have some sleep, obviously. And what, you have a hearty breakfast or skip breakfast?
We'll have a hearty breakfast because I've got all morning to have it. Don't about Patrick.
Do what you do normally. I mean, I'll have cereal, although the cereal that I've located in the shops here really isn't what I normally have. But Julie often doesn't have much in the way of breakfast. That's up to her.
So there's five matches. So 5 10 board matches, as Patrick said. Canada, Turkey, Switzerland. Chile is the last one. I don't know.
And there'll be different countries that the other teams, like the Open or the Women or the Seniors, will be playing different countries in their round robins. Barry and Jenny are sitting out the first one against Canada. Julie and I are sitting out the second one against Turkey. And Blair and Liz are sitting out the third one against Switzerland. But after that, it just might depend on who the captain thinks should be playing the next match. So we're getting two of the best three.
Well, as we're missing out on Canada, one thing's for sure, I won't be having bacon for breakfast.
Hey, tell me, how was your trip over there?
It's long. It wasn't that comfortable.
Yeah, it's a long trip. 10-hour flight to Santiago.
Was
it 11-hour flight to Santiago. And then you have to trek 3 miles through the terminal to get to your gate for the flight, which is a 2-hour flight from Santiago to Buenos Aires.
And just over an hour that you get to get off the plane, get your luggage, get whatever you've got to get, and get to the next one. You get about an hour and 20 minutes or something. And because Jenny and I went to the wrong terminal to start with, actually, there was still enough time, but we didn't get much time to relax.
Oh, you guys are hilarious.
Barry even drove the taxi. We got a taxi, and of course, someone decided to sit on the left-hand front seat.
You know how you enter the passenger, you get on the left-hand side? I sat down there, and there was a steering wheel. You know, my teammate's going to keep this news quiet so nobody heard about it? No chance.
I ask you, Mariana, would you have kept it quiet?
We air his dirty laundry as much as possible.
Hey, I've got my silver fern on, by the way. You're looking at this.
Oh, yeah.
We've got to still get our silver ferns on.
Did Barry share with you, Patrick, that I expect the team to come back with winning something, just like all the rest of the Kiwis have been winning over the last week?
You never know. I mean, for instance, I would have thought our chances were as good as the women's cricket team. We're now going to have to take that assessment back.
After losing 10 in a row, I did reply to your message about that, saying that it was long odds of us getting a medal. You never know.
In particular, our Open team, Matthew and Michael, have been playing very well recently. So if you say which one of our teams has the best chance, perhaps it's our Open team. It could be anything. We could qualify in the top 16 in every group, or in none of the groups. They just can't pick it sometimes.
I had a short conversation with Michael Weir and Matthew McManus, telling them how disappointed I was in them, because apparently they went to Patagonia or somewhere, stayed on a ranch, got an opportunity to ride a horse, and neither of them would.
Could you picture them on a horse?
No.
There you go. Rest my case. All right. Hey, well, thanks,
good
guys.
Good luck.
Good luck tomorrow.
Bye.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.